Welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast. We have got a returning co-host, a good friend of the show and a good friend in real life. It is Pietro from the Limited Edition. I'm just back from spending a good few days with this gentleman over in Geneva at Geneva Watch Days 2022. And we have got a guest that's never been on the show before, but his brand's products have been, and they have also been in video because a couple of years back we actually featured a couple of releases on our YouTube channel, which is making a comeback. So stay tuned for that. But Pietro, how are you doing? And how have things been since you got back from Geneva?
I'm very well, Ricky. Yes, it was a whirlpool of emotions, I have to say, in Geneva. I thoroughly enjoyed the show. I was listening to your latest episode, the part one, I think, of your coverage of the Geneva Watch Days, and I felt very much like you and Dave felt about the event. Easy, informal, nice, with plenty of time and plenty of flexibility by the brands to actually have a look at all the things that we need to look at, and especially meeting people and spending quality time with them.
Totally. And it was the first chance I had to meet Johnny from the Watch Press, another fantastic guy who's in the media industry, I suppose we would call what we're in, the community sphere, you know, the collectors and the independent arena. And that's obviously why we have got a gentleman on the line today to speak about some watches. And you know this gentleman better than I do, so make your introductions.
Yes, so a gentleman that has influenced, I have to say, what has been my love for independent watchmaking for a very long time, a pioneer in his own way, as he embraced the challenge of revamp a name that comes from the history of watchmaking, and an entrepreneur that has put everything on the table in order to achieve his mission and his dream with the brand that is now called Louis Monet. As I said, is a revamp of one of the most legendary names in the history of watchmaking, by the books, by legacy, by tradition, and by history. So it's a pleasure to bring on the show Jean-Marie Schaller from Louis Monet. Hi, Jean-Marie. How are you?
Hello, Pietro. Hello, Ricky. Nice to be with you today. I'm good. Thank you.
Now, for all the listeners who listen to the show religiously, and there are many of you, thank you for listening. We always like to do a wrist check at the beginning just to set the scene, and also it's a good reminder to check the show notes. There's going to be a lot of watches spoken about today, a lot of watches that maybe I don't know about and a lot of watches that you probably don't know about. So you'll want to play along at home, scroll along with the pictures in the show notes that Mizia will provide, and you'll be able to visually see what it is we're talking about and describing as we go through the next hour. So I think probably our guest from Louis Monet should go first. Tell us what you are wearing on the wrist today.
For me today, I'm wearing the Memories Spirit, which is our newest creation. Louis Monet invented the chronograph in 1816. This is something that was very mysterious because, like Pietro said earlier, Louis Monet is now considered as one of the most important watchmakers that has written the history of watchmaking. And so was he when he was alive in the early 19th century. But after he passed in 1853, he came very quickly forgotten because he was a very humble and mysterious man. So his creation disappeared, all his legacy was hidden. And when I restarted a second chapter creating a company called Les Ateliers Louis Monet, which means the workshops Louis Monet, and the idea is to collaborate with other independent workshops, I had to search and find in many different places the pieces of this jigsaw, which is not completed yet, by the way. And the most astonishing surprise was to find out that Louis Monet was really the inventor of the chronograph. It's a piece that he started in 1815 and he completed in 1816 in Paris, that he used for his own use, astronomical measurements, measuring the transit of the stars of the planets. And this piece was in a private collection. So it was like a sleeping beauty. It took me 4 years to finally find out. And I was lucky because the timing was really excellent. It was finally auctioned from Christie's in Geneva in May 2012. And I was super lucky once again to acquire this piece. And then we analyzed it and we found out that it was the first ever chronograph. So we called for a press conference, but only in March 2013, because we wanted to be 100% sure of what we said. So we got a letter from the International Watch Museum in La Chaux-de-Fonds. We completely disassembled and reassembled the watch. Not me, thank God, because I'm very clumsy. So we had a top flight watchmaker to do that. And then we said, excuse us, we know we are a small company, independent company, and we are not of the importance of the majors, but in the name of Louis Moinet, we have to rewrite the history of watchmaking, which was something incredible beyond everything that I could have dreamt of. And since then, that piece has got two Guinness World Records, one for being the first ever chronograph, and the second one for being the first ever high-frequency timepiece, because it beats at a rate of 216,000 vibrations an hour. As you know, a modern watch beats at a rate usually of 28,800. So we speak about Leonardo da Vinci inventing, making this design of a helicopter in his time. Louis Moinet was 100 years ahead of his time. And today, of course, we have created a state-of-the-art chronograph, which was initially launched in 2015, which is called Memories. And the feature is that all the chronograph part has been dissociated from the normal mechanical part of the watch and put up front. So it means when you play the chronograph, for instance, you can see all the column wheel, the lever, all the gears, all the wheels moving under your eyes. And this new piece that I'm wearing today is the latest version we created with a diameter of 40 millimeter, whereas previously we were at 46 millimeter.
I was listening to that story thinking, I forgot I'd actually asked you what you were wearing on your wrist. I was getting the full history lesson there. And before we move on to Pietro, because I know he's dying to tell us what he's wearing on the wrist, I've got a couple of questions to quickly ask. You said there that you discovered that Louis Moinet was the creator of the chronograph, the earliest one. Before this was found out, who was it that everyone thought was the creator of the chronograph?
Well, I would say that it was before attributed to another watchmaker from Toulouse in France by the name of Rieusec. Rieusec made in 1822 a counter that is completely different from the one of Louis Moinet, and that was used primarily to time horse races. And actually, the tip of the hand of this creation was put in ink, and it didn't touch the dial until a pusher was engaged, and then puff, by touching the dial, it had this mark of ink. Therefore, Rieusec, when he applied for a patent, he called it chronograph, writing time.
Ah, so that's where that comes from.
That's a great story.
That's what this show's all about. It's education. And yeah, within the first 10 minutes, there we go. We're learning a lot of stuff. So that's your wrist check done. Tons more questions for you. You sit tight. Right, Pietro, what are you wearing just now?
Yeah, just as a reference to what we were discussing, I used to be involved with a brand as well, under which name, you know, the father of the chronograph was supposed to be, and the brand was Graham, a Swiss brand with a British heritage. And on the history books, as Jean-Marie Schaller says, yeah, Nicolas Rieusec was attributed the invention. George Graham was attributed the initial idea of a tool that could measure the time. But then Louis Moinet, the discovery by Jean-Marie Schaller and Louis Moinet completely changed all the cards on the table and revolutionized what knowledge was up to that point when we did our studies of horology beforehand. So very fascinating story. Yeah, I'm wearing an independent piece, of course, and it's the first limited edition that we released with the limited edition, and it's a Corum Bubble Qatar Legacy, as we call it.
Did we do a video on that one as well?
I'm pretty sure we did, and yes, mm-hmm. Yes, I haven't worn it for a long time, and these days I'm feeling about, you know, like getting back to the roots of the limited edition itself, and you know, for the sake of sticking to the to our mission as well as well as Louis Moinet is doing, of course, in the development of their brand. So there you go.
Perfect. Well, I am wearing a limited edition watch, one of 69 pieces. It is, of course, the Christopher Ward and Scottish Watches collaboration watch, the Highland. Based on the Sealander C63 automatic. This one here, if you don't already know, and you should if you've been playing along at home, looking at show notes, looking at our Instagram and listening to our previous episodes, it's a fantastic little piece that we've had on the market for a couple of months now. I believe it's completely sold out. There was a little bit of back and forwards because some people had placed some orders and then never actually paid for them.
Which is not good.
As listeners may know, we announced in January with fulfillment and delivery, hopefully around about March and April time. Then, as everybody knows, supply chain issues just brought a halt to so many things, held up production, and by the time that they were ready to get sent out round about July time, quite a few people had bought new watches, they were on holiday, there was energy price problems, lots of things got in the works, but no, I believe they're all away to good homes, and I enjoy wearing this little guy. And the problem is, as I keep saying on the show, so many watches come in for review, so many watches to wear. I've only got two wrists, I've only got 24 hours in a day. So that is the wrist checks done, and I think, Bertro, you should give us a bit of a history then on the brand and this gentleman who's in front of us, because he obviously didn't just appear out of nowhere and launch this regeneration of such a historic name, and it's a name that I didn't know of. Obviously we know Breguet, we know Mudge, we know various other names throughout history, but Louis Monet, it never stuck in my mind as a gentleman who invented something that we all adore so much today.
Absolutely. I think obviously before passing the word to Jean-Marie, the little contribution I can make is to try to put Louis Monet in a perspective of what is independent watchmaking nowadays. As we said, Louis Monet, an absolute incredible protagonist of the end of the 18th and 19th century, beginning of the 19th century, with some of the most spectacular inventions in the field of watchmaking. But as Jean-Marie has already mentioned, Louis Monet was a curious mind, above all. He was not only a watchmaker, but he actually trained himself as a painter, as a sculptor, if I'm not mistaken, a stone engraver, even more exactly. He traveled Italy, he traveled France, he collaborated with unknown watchmakers such as Louis Abraham Breguet, for example, just to give one name. The work in watchmaking was equally as inspiring as the work he did on himself to actually explore and develop his abilities in all arts. One thing for you, Ricky, to you know how in watchmaking there is this mix of, you know, watchmakers that bring up their own new brand and watchmakers that obviously revamp a name from the past. So there is sometimes a confusion on how and why somebody would do that and what is the actual value that you bring by doing that. And I think in the case of Louis Monet, this affinity between Louis Monet himself and Jean-Marie in the way they see life, they like traveling and they like studying deeply into arts, astronomy and watchmaking, I think that's the link. And there is a thing that Jean-Marie says always, he says he felt like Louis Monet talked to me back in the days and he found real inspiration to be able to revamp. So I think putting it into context would be fantastic if we can do that in this show.
To add on that, it's something that I've thought long and hard about recently, especially spending time in Geneva and seeing all these different brands that some have got continual lineage from hundreds of years ago. Some have been taken from the past and inspired by all these creations and fantastic inventors. I mean, we've obviously dealt with Moser in the past, Chapek, there's a name that is at the absolute tipping point of current hot horology and bringing it to the masses with like Antarctique and various other things. It doesn't seem to be the case that maybe 5 years ago it was, if you brought a name back, people might be a little bit dubious about it. But I think now holding someone in such high esteem and high regard and using it as an accolade to drive you forward, even the folks at Maurice Grossman, they use the ideas of the past, of that creator, in the current contemporary timepieces. And I think that's a good thing. I have changed my mind and I don't mind admitting when I am wrong and I was wrong about my ideas of the past. I think it's a great thing. Right, well, it's time to speak to you, Jean-Marie, about your history. As I mentioned just a little while ago there, you've obviously not just appeared out of nowhere. You seem to know what you're talking about and you've got a bit of history to yourself. So can you explain, you know, your time in the industry, how you got into watches and how it brought you to this time period just now?
Do you know Asterix, the cartoons?
Yeah.
I feel like Obelix, you know. He always says that because he doesn't know the magic potion that makes you strong. Because when he was small, he fell into the cauldron. And same happened to me with watches. I was born and raised in the Jura Mountains, where there is not much to do, but where we have a big love for watches. And I was surrounded by these case manufacturer and other suppliers that really I could see already as a small boy that for them it was like an heritage, a patrimony that they defended. It was not about making a living. Everybody has to make a living, of course. But For them, it went beyond that. And the first time I received a watch, I was, if you would have asked me what you'd prefer, a watch, a car, or a house by the sea, I would have told you a watch, of course. So it is something that has always been very important to me. I went to different countries because I love to travel. And I made some studies, not in the technical part, more in the marketing and advertising side. And very quickly, I started to work for the Amiga distributor in Switzerland. It was a bad period for the distributor, but it was a good period for me, if I may say, in the sense that I was young and very hungry for new experiments. At that time, the typical historical distributors, they lost the brands, creating their subsidiaries. So it happened to my company. And we lost, we were number one in Japan, for instance, and we lost all the brands. We were also in Switzerland, we lost Amiga and Audemars Piguet, and we needed to have some new plans. So then I became a project manager, and my role was to go meet the independents and the brands to convince them to work with us. I remember Frank Müller. At that time, he worked in a very small workshop, and his wife cooked the spaghetti next to him. It was an unbelievable period. So I met Daniel Roth, and I was very lucky that I was able to launch his name in Japan. I remember this meeting. There were 80 journalists. 80 journalists, can you believe
it? What a privilege.
Yes, it was a privilege. You are right. And it is not that we had to market the tourbillon. It had... Our mission was to educate people what was a tourbillon, because they didn't know. Daniel Roth, together with Breguet, they made the very first tourbillon wristwatches. Yes, I'm speaking about the 80s. And the very first one who told me about Louis Moinet was Daniel Roth, because we traveled from Paris to Tokyo, and in the plane he told me, Jean-Marie, I know you want to have your own brand once. Look at Louis Moinet, it really suits you well. Because you have to imagine that before launching his own brand, Daniel was the first watchmaker hired from Breguet when Breguet belonged to the Chaumé brothers and they had to restart the company from scratch.
So this was before the Swatch days?
Yes, it was before. And you know what he did first? He studied the archives of Breguet. And of course, Louis Moinet is mentioned so many times, he recognized the importance of Louis Moinet. So it was my first signal. But you know what happened? Nothing. Because I forgot about it. And then I used to teach marketing to grown-ups who were working. And one of them was like my small brother. He's 10 years younger than I am. And you know, what is big brother doing? And there is always this copycat thing that, okay, whatever he does, I will try to do the same. He followed my path in this. And at that time, I had relaunched Perrelet. So during the evening courses, I spoke to them about Perrelet, and off he goes, and he registers Louis Moinet. And then he comes to me and he says, you have to buy this brand from me. I said, excuse me, what? And I was, of course, I told him, go away, I'm not interested. I was not interested at the time. Then things changed in my life. I had personal challenges with a divorce. I came back with very, very little money. I came back from France because I took a sabbatical in France. I'm Swiss myself. I came back to Switzerland. As I said, everybody has to make a living. And I understood this concept at that time because I was very low on cash. But at the same time, I had this dream and this big heart. I wanted to create my company. So I went to work for Lacoste Watches, which was a marketing challenge, nothing to do with expensive watches. And we did well. We went from 40,000 pieces to 260,000 pieces a year just by changing a few things. And during this time, I told my my employer that I wanted to start my own project. And she says, okay, go ahead, because there was no competition between Lacoste and my project. And this is how I started Louis Moinet. Ah, but I forgot to tell you. Finally, I bought Louis Moinet because it was amazing. There was a friend of mine, he's an attorney in Geneva, and a good friend of mine. So we went to see the football game. I think Arsenal won that night, Pietro, which is not as usual these days, but...
For a change.
For a change, thank you. And nothing. I asked him, what do you think of Louis Moinet? I had not bought the brand, and he said nothing. And the next day he calls me and he said, I have a buyer for your Louis Moinet. I said, excuse me, what is this? And actually my friend, the owner of Trademark, he had put Louis Moinet on the list of a corporation in Switzerland that publishes every month a list of brands for sale. And my friend, he had a customer who wanted to buy Louis Moinet. And instead of going directly to this Info Suisse, it is called Info Suisse, this company, he called my friend, the attorney, and he says, buy this brand. And I told him, what? How much does he want to spend? He said 15,000. And my friend, he wanted 8,000. So 15 minus 8 is 7. And I hang up the phone. I took, I called Gerard, that's his name. And I said, okay, I'll buy for 8,000. But as soon as I paid him, I said, oh my goodness. You know, it was like a very strange feeling. It was like achieving a goal with your own resistance. I realized this is really what I wanted, but I found excuses not to buy it. And since then, it has been something in which very much linked to my destiny, I believe, because I'm not selling Bibles, I'm not selling anything other than watches, but it was something really incredible because, as Pietro said earlier, sometimes I have a feeling Louis Moinet speak to me. And it is an emotion, it is an experience, it's a life experience that goes far beyond making a living. So I'm very much attached to this name.
I would say that sounds quite familiar to me, because when I've heard Jean-Claude Biver speak, he's said things in the past where he feels as if the ghosts of the past have spoken to him. Breguet, other people, you know, it kind of comes to him when he's surrounded by all this heritage, and he's the biggest guy in the watch industry. We all know that, and we all bow down at his feet, and for good reason. But you've mentioned names there that again have come up recently with ourselves on our recent shows. An episode that's gone out just in the last couple of weeks was with Fabrizio from Bulgari, and he was talking about Daniel Roth. He was talking about this, that, and the other. We've had Perle involved in the show in the last few weeks. They're looking to do an episode as well with us to let people know all about it. It all comes together. And the story there about you were offered to buy something, you were a little bit on the fence about it, couldn't decide, wanted to, didn't want to. Someone offers bigger cash, which pushes you, the universe pushes you to buy, and then you stop and go, okay, that was the nudge that I needed to move forward with it. No, I totally get it.
I'm glad you do.
Yeah. So from there, how have things sort of moved forward? Obviously, I said to Pietro before we hit record, my first introduction to Louis Moinet was when I knew nothing about watches, and that was only 5.5 years ago. I went to my first Baselworld in 2017, told the story a million times, won't bore the listeners again, but I walked through the front doors and saw everything. 1,500 brands spread across watches, independents, multinationals, plus gemstones and the jewellery side as well. And Louis Moinet was a brand I didn't know anything about, but I wandered over to have a look. And there was a gentleman, an elderly man, painting with oils on the display stand, showcasing all these different watches. And I had a good look, and I actually recorded it in my old iPhone 6. I got some little video clips. And that was my first intro, and I've always remembered it, even though back then I knew nothing about the brand. So since you brought it back, how have things been? How did you start? What was your first releases? And how does that bring us up to where we are today?
That's a very interesting question, because you have to imagine year 2000, I have this name, I want to do something with it, but I have a blank sheet of paper and I'm blind. I am blind because I'm being asked to write a second chapter following a first chapter that I don't really know. All I had was an 8-page biography written when he passed from one of his best friends. But of course, this was very vague. So then I started like a laboratory, you know, to make experimentation. And also with the budget I had, because I was not rich, I really funded this with my own money. And thank God some good friends helped me, but it was not easy. So I could do, for instance, some steel cases, but no gold cases at that time. And I started with Vintage Movement, a beautiful Limagna 1863, which is a chronograph. So, and from the very first watch until today, all our watches have been either in unique items or limited edition. Limited edition, normally 12, 28, 60, numbers that have to do with the concept of time. And they bear all four hallmarks in the case back, from the first one to the last one. And then I started gradually to find some evidence of the beautiful story of Mr. Moinet, and the internet helped a lot, I must tell you. So, for instance, I found out that he was a watchmaker to two American presidents, Thomas Jefferson, James Monroe, King of England, Napoleon, the Princess of Rome, which is Napoleon's sister, the Tsar of Russia, the King of Naples, and some other very important people. I found some original copies of his watchmaking treatise, which has a reputation to be the most important book from the 19th century. And I found some pocket watches, some clocks, and today we have opened our own small museum here in Saint-Blaise. To have history is like a tree. They are the roots. In a tree, what is of interest are the big red apples and not the roots. So you need to have the roots to have the apples. But don't forget to give water to the seeds, to the tree, to make this happen. And today, I think I made a mistake when I started. If you would have stopped during your first visit at Baselworld, I would have spoken to you too much about Louis Moinet and too little about the product. Because I had this lack of knowledge about our roots that I wanted to compensate. And I made a mistake not to be enough contemporary. Now, I think everything is in good place, and our watches are very contemporary. They have won something like 50 international design, quality, technology prizes in the world, different awards. So they really show quality, I believe, but they are very modern. So a chronograph was invented 200 years ago, but it is not because of that you have to make a chronograph that looks old. It's to have an historical brand is like a trap at the same time, because if you try to imitate what was made 200 years ago, I think you will fail. We try to get inspired from the unique vision of Louis Moinet and to use this to develop watches that go hopefully beyond what is on the market today. Excuse me, this is not very humble to say that. It is not what I mean. What I mean is we don't do benchmarking. We don't do this, you know, there is a market for such and such watches. We really try to create art and to do it our own way. This is what I mean by that.
Well, I'm remembering probably a year and a half ago, just around about COVID times, when you shipped up a whole load of Louis Moinet watches for me to have a look at. And as I said, we released a couple of videos and to see them and the way they work. And you're right, you haven't stuck to this is how it was created hundreds of years ago, but you've taken that germ, the ghostly presence, you know, the authenticity of the past, but you've used contemporary watchmaking technologies and materials to bring it bang up to date. Now, we've talked about chronograph, but we're starting to move into the other areas. So do you want to talk a little bit about that side of things as well?
Yes, of course. As it was said before, Louis Moinet was an artist, a watchmaker, an astronomer. Actually, when he looked at the transit of the stars, inside his telescope, there was a graduation to the 60th of a second. That is why he needed to keep his eye on the planet he was observing, and at the same time to have in his hand a timepiece to the 60th of a second that he could start and stop at his leisure. So there was, you know, the same between the telescope and the watch, that was the same correspondence. And this is why he had to invent the first chronograph and also high frequency. Because if you take 216 vibrations an hour divided by the second, there is 60 beats, so 60th of a second. So this is for the history. Today, what we are using primarily to evoke the cosmos, actually there are three things. The first one is the use of extraterrestrial material, meteorites, and we are the first and only brand to use Moon and Mars meteorites. I have here a collection in the safe of 30 different meteorites. Some of them we have not used, of course, but it's something amazing. And these meteorites, they all tell you a different story. We have one, for instance, containing blocks of life, amino acids. Can you imagine?
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know about this.
Does NASA know about this?
It was meteorites. There is nothing to fear from NASA because we have we are not taking anything from the NASA. You know, some people, they stole meteorites from the NASA and they resell them. In our case, I work with one source only in the world, His name is Luc Labène. He is the authority in meteorites, and he has become a very good friend. And because I want to be sure, some people, they have offered me meteorites saying it was from Mars. Then you analyze and it is not from Mars. So I have to be very careful, because for me, once I use them in our watches, I have to give you an authenticity certificate, and it has to be 100% sure.
I didn't know there was a black market in dodgy meteorites. That's news to me.
Is there a website?
It's on the dark web. Get it through Tor. Tell us about the current models that you've got out just now then, the ones that people may have seen in the recent past and the ones that you've currently got available, because I'm keen to find out. Now, you've given me the story, you've built it all up. I want to know all about the details.
Today, what is available is Supermoon and the Mars mission. These are two creations, including Moon and Mars meteorites. Before, we made a limited edition of 60 watches called Moon and Mars, but they were very quickly sold out. And these ones, Supermoon and Mars mission, they belong to our best sellers. So the problem for us is really to manufacture them rather than to sell them. They're really very successful. And Ricky, we are also working on different projects. We want to use meteorites in a different way now. So we have projects running. It will take, normally, you know, I hope 6 months, but at the end it's always 1.5 year, something like this. So this will be for, I hope, for next year. We'll see. We have also another category, which is what you call flown material. These are some pieces that were on board, for instance, Apollo 11, maybe a screw that was on board Apollo 11, maybe some Captain Foil. Captain Foil is a material that was put around the spaceship to protect it from heat when it re-enters the Earth atmosphere. And here also we work with a specialist, and everything is authenticated. But some, there is, for instance, we have made a set of 4 pieces called Moonrace. There are 4 watches, and each watch include some material that went to the moon and back. When I say that, I need to be precise. It was not really on Apollo 11, because on the LEM, on the LEM that landed on the moon. Because then the LEM, when the third man orbiting the moon with the module command, the LEM then departed from the moon and was affixed to the module command. And then it was eliminated in space. It never came back to the Earth. Whereas when you see these missions landing on water, this was the module command. So the material we have is from the module command.
I wonder what Louis Monet, and if Louis Monet himself would have imagined how far, obviously, the brand revamped in his name would have gone in order to talk about his fascination for astronomy, and when he was maybe kind of preempting that, you know, a landing on the moon would have ever happened. It's fascinating.
I hope he is.
Well, Pietro, why don't you jump in? Because you've been a little bit quiet in this edition. It's unlike you. You've been dealing with Louis Monet along with a ton of other micro and independents over the course of your development of limited edition. And you came from the big lofty heights of the conglomerates back in the day. Graham's been mentioned, other companies and brands you've worked with have been mentioned. But what is the collector feel at the moment then for Louis Monet? Because you've been selling them for a number of years now.
Yeah, there has been a real journey in the perception of a chronograph, if I can start from there. Chronograph is a complication that is often take it for granted, because in many commercial timepieces of any price range, you can, you know, sooner or later you'll find that the second or third watch that any brand would experiment with would be a chronograph. Many people like the look of a chronograph without even necessarily having to operate a chronograph, or, you know, some of them never do. But actually, I discovered in my 20 years journey in horology, and I'm not a watchmaker myself, I discovered that a chronograph, especially an in-house made chronograph, building a caliber, a chronograph caliber, is one of the most difficult tasks in watchmaking altogether.
People don't think of this. The fact that you can get chronographs so universally on all brands versus a Tourbillon, whereas everybody thinks that tourbillons are really, really complicated and must have many, many more moving parts. They don't. They're far, far simpler from what I can tell in speaking to watchmakers versus the chronograph, where you've got so many intricate parts that all need to work completely in unison for the thing to work.
Absolutely. In a memories chronograph, there are, correct me if I'm wrong, Jean-Marie, but something like 140 different parts that actually constitute the chronograph module, on the face of the watch, so visible from the dial. And so the journey for me was quite exciting, because I came from understanding the relevance from the horological perspective of a chronograph. And then, of course, Louis Monet came up with this offer, especially, we're talking 10 years ago, more or less, when I started to appreciate the memories and what Jean-Marie was starting to, you know, was trying to do with the chronograph. And, quite rightly, it may be a coincidence, but Louis Monet used to work with Breguet, with some of the incredible names in the world of watchmaking. And today, it wouldn't be profane to say that as we connect the name of Abraham Louis Breguet to the tourbillon, necessarily the name of the chronograph has to be connected with Louis Monet. And much beyond that, I think Jean-Marie got it really right in not trying to copy whatever was done in the past, but coming up with a new interpretation of a chronograph. Another big success has been the launch of the new Spirit, so the new memory Spirit, because this horological work that was done with all these so many hundreds parts, you know, to put together a chronograph module, has been readapted in a smaller shape, which is something that was probably needed on a watch that is actually thinner, is more ergonomic in some ways, is less in your face, but still very, very iconic and still not looking like anything else. So if you haven't seen the new Memory Spirit, go on the website and have a look, because I am not shy in saying that it's probably, you know, in the top three of my favorite chronographs out there. And it's not because Jean-Marie is here, because I mentioned this quite a few times before, and we do sell other chronographs. So, you know, that's my take on the work that Louis Monet has done on the chronograph. But Jean-Marie, from your perspective, what is the most iconic, most important model, chronograph, or maybe not a chronograph, because we know all the relevance of, the tempograph, for example, which is one of the very, I think it's the only double retrograde small second on the market. If that means, you know, I don't know how much that means to the audience that is listening to us today, but it may be worth it explaining and describing.
You just pointed out my two favorites. Now, I must tell you, once again, I come back to this image of a blind guy starting in his kitchen 20 years ago, not knowing what he has to do with Louis Monet. You have to imagine that when we discovered that Louis Monet was the inventor of the chronograph, it has given us a fantastic feeling of self-confidence, not arrogance, but self-confidence, and also a purpose, and also a mission. So the chronograph is really our flagship. And I agree with you, of course, that Memory's Spirit is now the probably our, it will become very quickly our bestseller. We have had a very, very good success at Watches and Wonders. Until the end of the year, we have now to manufacture and deliver as many watches as we did the entire 2021. So it shows you that it has been super successful. We have started cooperation with 15 new top retailers in the world, should it be in Asia, Middle East, Europe or America, Americas, because there is also Mexico. And this is the future. One I like in particular is Time to Race. Time to Race. Some people, they say, you said before the chronograph is taken for granted from a technical point of view and also for his use. Eh, what shall I do with a chronograph? It doesn't help me. Come on. A chronograph is the master of timing in sports. So I came up with this concept called Time to Race that is linked to the original, the early days of auto racing, at a time when the automakers could not choose their own painting, but they had to go for racing green if they were British, and they had to go to Rosso Corsa per l'Italia, et Bleu de France pour la France. And there is one, Ricky, one day I'd like to make it. It's this beautiful blue you have for Scottish. Écurie Écosse.
I've actually done work for them
really?
In the past. Yeah, I did a photo shoot when they had a collaboration with Jaguar XF, I think it was.
Lovely.
It all ties together, this show. It all ties together.
I'm also very grateful. I don't know what's your take on this, Jean-Marie Henrique, but the work that also Max Busser has done recently with the LM Sequential Evo with Stephen McDonald in Ireland, really glorifying the beauty and the sophistication of a chronograph, comes as a bit of a icing on the cake in terms of a final understanding for everybody, you know, to be there, available, to really understand what is the chronograph in watchmaking. And I feel that Jean-Marie and Louis Monet have a big credit for having done that over the last 10 years in such a solid way with the memories itself. There is another incredible collection, Jean-Marie. I don't know if you want to spend the word or two, because I think it sums up a little bit the journey of Louis Monet himself, as you said, as an artist, as a dreamer, but in a very scientific way, of course, a researcher, and as a watchmaker, of course. And it's this incredible collection that you have called the Eight Marvels. And for those that haven't seen, there is a video on YouTube, and it's actually narrated by Robert Davi. And for people of my age, Robert Davi is obviously one of the glorious characters in the original Goonies movie back in the 80s. And Robert Davi has taken the time, and I think he's a friend now for you, Jean-Marie, to describe and to narrate one of the most incredible watch box sets ever made, I think, and one of the bravest as well endeavors, Jean-Marie. How did you get to something like that, and what was your mission and your goal by doing what you've done?
You know, the timing played an important role. I was in Mexico and had a day off in Mexico, so I went to visit the pyramid, and I realized there was a pyramid in Mexico which was part of the official UNESCO list of the seven marvels of the world. Then I decided to make eight marvels of the world with my own choice. Sometimes it is part of the official selection, sometimes it is not, but it is highlighting the most beautiful monuments in this world, from the Taj Mahal to Petra to the Colosseum in Rome, to the Blue Mosque in Istanbul, the Great Wall of China, etc. And we did it, if you allow me to say, thanks to the COVID. Thanks to the COVID. So you can see that this bloody experience that we went through at least had a silver lining. Because we got we received the approval from the Fondation de la Haute Horlogerie that we would participate to the first edition of Watches and Wonders. And this was not this year, but last year. And the people employed in so-called métier d'art, you know, métier d'art in French, it means art that cannot be performed by a machine. They didn't have much work or no work at all. So in a super short...
Shall we say artisanal skills?
That's better expressed. Yes, thank you. And they all have their own talent, because if you ask a mathematician what is 5 + 5, they will all say 10. But if you ask an engraver to perform a specific engraving, he'll do it his way. 10 engravers, 10 different engravings. And they work with special technologies, all of them. So it gives a special imprint, a special flavor to each piece made. So we build up this team of artisans, and they worked on the different projects. They were engraver, enameler, chiselers. There's also sometimes natural stones, sometimes precious stones, and
that's amazing, Jean-Marie, because it really creates a clear line between Louis Monet's himself, his journey in his lifetime, when he went to Rome to study painting, when he went to Florence to experiment as a stone engraver. So you are indirectly, of course, finding elements to add to your own contemporary way of re-establishing the brand, but obviously keeping faithful to what Louis Monet has gone through in his own formation.
You're right, always. This is very important. Louis Monet used to say, il ne faut jamais s'écarter de ce qui est vrai.
You should never deviate from what is true.
Yes. He was a good man.
Okay. Well, as we kind of round the show off, and we've gone on a hell of a journey here, learning about the past, the present, and potentially a little bit of the future, what you guys are going to be doing next. What is the future got in hold for Louis Monet, the brand? Have you got things in the wings? Are you working on anything for later on this year, next year? What should our listeners be keeping an eye out for?
We are working every day as a small company. I just signed the bills this morning, and it's amazing the amount of money we spend in product development. We can never rest, you know, because if we want to keep on top of this idea of having a mission to go beyond what is existing, it's never ending. So we have different projects, some of them at a certain stage we believe they will be impossible to finish. That's what happened with the space revolution, for instance, a double tourbillon rotating in two different directions at high speed. And many times, because this development lasted 3 years, many times we thought, oh, we're going to give up. It's impossible to make. But finally, we made it. And some of them were optimistic at the beginning. And then when we are confronted to reality, it is not as striking as we thought from a design point of view, or maybe technically there are some limitations. Sometimes, you know, when you use, Pietro said before, there were 140 parts in the chronograph part of the memories. There is another 170 in the automatic part. So when you play with so many mechanical pieces that work together, sometimes you are confronted with a space problem. Sometimes it is too big. It happened to us in the past. So the watch looks a bit clumsy. And if it doesn't look good, Louis Monet was an artist, so he would not approve. So we drop it. And we have some projects that are done without any special problems. Sometimes we have very good news as well. So now we are going to prepare a major launch for Watches and Wonders. So we have, last week we saw the very first ebauche, which means the rough movement itself. And it looks wow. So I'm happy about this. And we have also another project that is a little bit early with the moon again, but this time completely different from everything that exists.
Okay, well, there are many things to keep an eye on, and there are many things to look at in the present catalogue. And are most, if not all, of these available through limited edition, Pietro, or do you only have access to a handful?
No, as Jean-Marie explained, all the editions are actually limited editions. So to an extent, we try to be on board for every launch and then try to inform clients well in advance, because as we all know today, the issue about independent watchmaking is to be able to jump on at the right time if you're interested in any of these artisanal timepieces. We were talking about the fact that we have been involved in, all of us, in educating, you know, obviously in the least patronizing meaning of the word.
Oh, no, I patronize everybody.
Especially Dave, don't you?
That's what he's here for.
So, yes, now it's time also to play down a little bit in some ways. And the way we have to do that is to inform, which is the reason we are here, well in advance from the Watches and Wonders releases, on which, you know, about which we will keep everybody informed when Jean-Marie will give us access to the information. But yes, on our website, Louis Monet is fully listed, and it's always worth sending us a WhatsApp message or an email if you want to know more about availability, pricing, etc., etc.
Perfect. And Jean-Marie, where will people find out more about yourself, the brand, and the products? Have you got Instagram, and what's your website address?
The website is louismonet.com. Instagram, yes, we have Instagram, which is also Louis Monet.
And if people want to check out those links, look at the show notes, because it's not the way it sounds. It is spelled a little bit differently. There are some extra letters in there. But no, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. First time chatting, and I'm kind of glad I didn't do too much research. Generally on this show, I don't. I'd rather come in here pretty much like a listener, brand new, and hopefully I can ask some of the stupid questions that perhaps some of the listeners have got in their heads that they are a little bit too humble to ask. I'll be the idiot. I'll ask the silly questions. So it's been an absolute pleasure, Pietro, having you back on the show. It seems you're here more often than not, especially after Geneva Watch Days. I know we've got another couple of episodes that are either out already or are in the wings ready to drop. So looking forward to listeners hearing more of your dulcet tones as well. And if you want to hear more of my dulcet tones along with Dave, just make sure you subscribe wherever you find this Watches podcast. Check us out on Instagram at Scottish Watches. If you've got any suggestions for us, feedback, thoughts, comments, etc., drop us an email. Don't DM us. They just get lost in the ether. info@scottishwatches.co.uk, and also our website, where you can find news, reviews, previews, links to podcasts, videos, and many other things. The website address there is www.scottishwatches.co.uk. So thanks for listening, and we will catch you guys again soon.
Bye bye. Thank you.
Thank you.